You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Monday, 13 October. Chinese export data earlier this morning, 8.3% up year on year. That's from 4.4% previously. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Nkunza Sanlam, Private Wealth, Trump rattling markets again, and then the Harmony deal to buy the Australian copper miner Effective. Some thoughts on that, we'll ask Nick. Brendan Naidoo from Liberty Group. How to decide which of the 130,000 offshore funds is best for your investment. And then Gary Boyson, Rand Swiss, triple index auto call structured product. Designed, it looks like, for those who are worried about the high valuations in offshore markets. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Money headlines, MoneyWeb, whose grid connection is it anyway? Independent power producers flag Eskom's market dominance risk. And Business Day, court upholds Transnet's terminal deal. Judgment clears path for the Philippines-based operator to run Durban's Pier 2 terminal. Morning markets, lots of red. US was down 2.7% on the S&P, 3.5% on the NASDAQ, although the 10-year is a little better at 4.036%. East is mostly red. Sydney's up 0.25%. Tokyo is closed for Sports Day. Hong Kong down 3%. Tencent down 3.2%. Commodities, mostly green. Gold futures, 4,071. Brent is the red at 63.73. Platinum, 1,663. Palladium, 1,501. Rand, 1736. Bitcoin, 115,200. And top 40 opening call, red open, 880 points down, or 0.85%.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Nkunza, Senior Portfolio Manager at Sanlam Private Wealth. Nick, appreciate the early morning time. Friday got all wild and woolly on markets as President Trump said that by the end of the month he's going to put 100% tariff on all goods from China. Your take on it? I mean, reading the China response over the weekend, they like this seems to be very much around rare earth minerals. China saying it's not a full ban, it's applications that meet regulations will be approved. Is this, it looks like a bargaining chip. Am I reading this wrong, or is that sense your sense too?
Yeah, morning, Simon. Trying to read what Mr. Trump does on Truth Social is not an easy game. And as you said, I mean, obviously, market took a bit of a sort of massive knock, almost 3% in some indices on Friday, and then of course on the weekend, or in fact yesterday, he appeared to take a bit more of a conciliatory tone. He put something on True Social, talking about the highly respected President Xi, just got a bad moment, etc. So, I mean, trying to sort of trade these moves and you know, deciding what Trump thinks on a certain day is difficult. I guess they are trying to get to some sort of end game, though. If you understand what's been happening with the tariffs and which countries have agreed and which haven't agreed, you know, China's it's not even really at the negotiating table, and you know, this was supposed to sort of all be done by April or May. So, this is, I guess, some sort of bargaining chip, to your point.
Yeah, 90 deals in 90 days. I'm not sure we're at 9 deals yet. The short answer then is, and you've said this to me many, many times back since January 20th, is as an investor, don't panic. That's the key point. I suppose, truthfully, panic's actually never a good response, regardless.
It's not, and I think, you know, those who, you know, have a diversified portfolio, you've got quality shares, you know, one tweet and a 3% move really shouldn't rejig your exposures to certain things. I think, you know, the earnings season kicking off tomorrow is a far more important thing to keep an eye on, and certainly with regards to the lack of economic data with the US being shut. So I would certainly lean more on to how I look at my portfolio with what's coming up rather than Mr. Trump's whims on the weekend.
Yeah, you mentioned that earnings season, and of course, as usual, it's going to be a lot of the big banks. That's where we tend to start, and that's going to give us perhaps a lack of data coming through. It's going to give us a good sense of what really is kind of maybe happening.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the big banks, I mean, let's just touch on them. JP Morgan, yeah. Bank of America, Morgan Stanley, they're all kicking off this week. I think very important, given, you know, how much, you know, to look at the big themes, investment banking pipelines, what they've got in the backlog, et cetera. And of course, those who do follow markets, you know, financials tend to lead sort of markets up and lead markets down. Yeah. For the reasons we know. So if we want this rally to continue and have a bit of a Santa Claus rally into year end, we want these U.S. financials to really knock it out of the park this week to keep this rally going.
Yeah. A last question, the Harmony deal to buy the Mac Copper in Australia is now effective. Your thoughts on it? I mean, we've typically in South Africa had standalone gold miners. Of course, Sibanye, the exception, they started in gold and then went into PGMs. A gold-copper mix, like it, don't like it, we'll see what happens with it, I suppose.
I guess the gold bugs would hate it because very, very different, mixes for the product line. I don't think it's a bad deal at all, actually. And this is just my personal view. I think, you know, it's obviously they're quite different metals. So, I mean, you know, gold rises in the time of strength and copper tends to, Dr. Copper rises when economies are good. So they almost contradict each other, which I think maybe the Harmony board are thinking this might smooth the earnings a little bit. You know, certainly cut back a little bit of volatility. So yeah, maybe some of the listeners will hate me for this, but I actually quite like this deal. I think it's quite a good one for Harmony.
Yeah, I take your point. I appreciate. We love the boom boom of Harmony, but truthfully, some copper could actually make that quite attractive. We'll leave it there. Nick Kunza, Sanlam Private Wealth. Appreciate the early morning. That's our poll today. LinkedIn and Twitter is back to the tariffs on China. Is market going to bounce? More downside? What's your thought on it? Is this just a negotiating ploy? Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Brendan Naidu, lead specialist investment propositions, insurance and asset management, Liberty Group, South Africa. Brendan, good to chat again. A couple of things I want to touch on, but I want to talk broadly offshore. And in particular, I mean, I think we get the case for investing offshore, but I think a lot of folks are looking right now and worried about, I don't know, valuations and bubbles and AI and everything. The short version is for a long-term investor, wealth creation is mostly going to happen offshore. We're such a tiny part of the global economy.
Thanks, Simon. As always, a pleasure to chat to you. You're right. The case for offshore has certainly been made, and we've seen offshore investing change over the years from being a nice to have to becoming vital to now almost consider it essential.
Yeah.
I think that's the stage that we've got to. The question around valuations, are valuations looking frothy? Yeah, they are. They've looked frothy abroad for a number of years now, haven't they? But I think the bigger question is, look, I'm going abroad because I need a wider opportunity set than I have in South Africa. I want access to industries like AI that you mentioned, which will dominate for decades to come. And can I really get access to that in the listed market on South Africa's exchange right now? Probably not. So I think those are the dominating factors when going abroad. And of course, you've got the small matter of being a country on the southern tip of Africa with a volatile emerging market currency, which does not help the situation, albeit, you know, strengthening over the last few months.
But I take your point. And, you know, I mean, valuations, they come and go, but you don't necessarily need to be in the high expensive stuff. It's also, I like your point around essential. I would add to it, it's also become easy. 10 years ago, it was so, so easy. 20 years ago, getting offshore was really actually quite hard. These days, it really is, for anybody out there, a really simple process. And that's a big part of it.
No, absolutely. And if you think about it, the manners in which you can go offshore differ as well, right? So you and I are talking about offshore generally, but people could consider their RAN-based investment into an offshore fund. Mm-hmm. They could consider that offshore, right? The so-called asset swap, if you wanna name it that. But when we're talking about going offshore in hard currency, you know, using your single discretionary allowance, that has become much easier than times gone by. Yes, most of the business is done via financial advisors going into the most typical option used when going abroad is the international endowment. And I'm sure you know all those reasons and your listeners would as well. But also going into investment accounts for the odd cases. And I tell you what's really picked up over the last number of years is the use of structured products. And more specifically, and I think this when I say this, everyone's going to be nodding. Structured products give you upside opportunity with downside protection. Yeah. It feels like the best of both worlds. And that's why we've seen such an uptick in structured products. And I suppose being in a group like ours, we've actually got the ability to take a structured product, put it within an endowment, and now you've really got the best of both worlds there.
It's almost like magic. And I take your point. We've seen a significant growth in structured products, but they really are, again, 10 years ago, there were very few of them. Now they give you that downside. They give you the upside. It is kind of magic, but it is actually under the hood quite simple. And I think becoming a critical part of investors' portfolios.
Absolutely. And structures also give you the ability to, you know, if you look at it and you say, look, what structure am I investing in? Is it some fancy AI structure that gives me access and will form a satellite in my core satellite approach, right? Or am I invested in, you know, the S&P 500 and the Euro stocks to form the core part of my portfolio? So the way you use structures, whether you use it as a core or a satellite in your overall approach as well, differs from person to person, and we even see corporates using it as well.
Yeah, and I like that. It's around building that portfolio. A portfolio isn't all, you know, all in on NVIDIA. It's fun right now, but that could become painful. But then the next challenge, and there's 130,000 regulated funds globally. How do your fund solutions, how do your DFM teams, how do you sort through it and find the best in class? Because I got to be honest, I just look at the number of equities available and that overwhelms me.
No, look, I think you've hit the nail on the head there with the use of the word DFM. So discretionary fund managers they've had global tailwinds, and we've seen them really pick up in South Africa over the last number of years. And being part of our group, we've got a well-renowned DFM that's part of the group. Now, different businesses have different ways of curating these fund lists and getting to their essential buy list and eventually putting together a portfolio for their client, right? So I think the manner in which you do your operational due diligence, your performance due diligence, the manner in which you curate those funds down will differ across the country, I'm sure, depending on which business you're talking to. But we make use of strategic relationships. Now, our fund solutions business will have a strategic relationship with the likes of a BNP Paribas, who will help us narrow down that list, because these guys are sitting, you know, in Europe and have access to the world via their thousands of analysts around the world, right? So that's one manner in which you can curate your list and get it a little bit narrower and allow you to really dive into them and do the operational and performance due diligence that I was talking about. The other manner, which we're seeing become more and more popular, is form some strategic relationships with managers who are global players, and actually this is where they are experts. Now, again, and this isn't intended to be sort of punting here, but within the group, we formed a relationship via Stanlab Asset Management, a strategic relationship with JP Morgan Asset Management conglomerate, right? And more of these plays are happening in South Africa, because again, if you're sitting in the southern tip of Africa and you say to yourself, 130,000 funds available abroad, go pick one that will work for my client. Sheesh, that's a tough starting point.
Even more so for the individual. And it's why the importance of advice. And I know a lot of my listeners are DIY investors, and absolutely. But the respect is, I can't do the level of due diligence over a fraction of those funds. This is where advice really sort of pays for itself and earns its stripes.
Simon, when going abroad, I think advice almost earns its stripes and more, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because yes, there are complications, right? Complications that need to be factored in. Words that I've heard on your show many a time, like situs and probate, etc. But there's also more simplistic questions like, do you want a beneficiary for ownership or do you want a beneficiary for proceeds? That is going to impact your intergenerational wealth transfer plans, right? And it can get a bit further than that, because financial advisors are no longer just, you know, people who run numbers. We're talking here about people who are data gatherers, psychologists, behavioral scientists, problem solvers, communication specialists, and everything in between. But the role that they perform has moved on from being from being a service provider. I think they're now a strategic partner to a client.
I like that. And the psychologist part, I've beaten that drum so many times. They talk you off the ledge when you start to panic. We leave it there. Brandon Naidoo, you find him, Liberty Group South Africa. Appreciate the time.
Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the Stanlab Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Gary Boyson from Rand Swiss. Gary, appreciate the early morning time. You've got a structured product out. I think 22 October is when people need to apply. Triple index auto call. Let's touch on some of the details on it. It is three indices and with a minimum 12% return per annum. Talk us through the top parts of it.
Yeah, so let's start with the simple mechanics. So yeah, we're going to link to three indices. Mm-hmm. So it's the S&P 500, the Nikkei, and the Euro stocks. Mm-hmm. And what you're looking for there is you just want all of them to be positive. So mm-hmm. essentially the worst index just has to deliver 0.001% return, and you'll get your coupon. So the duration is 5 years. So you've got 5 years. When I say that's the maximum duration, because mm-hmm. with an auto call, you have these observations that you kind of check that. Is it all positive? Is it all positive? You check that 9 times. So we're going to check it from 12 months and then every 6 months after that. And as long as they're positive, you'll get your 12% simple interest return. And that's a US dollar return. It's not a Rand return. So just to put that return in context, the S&P 500 on average does what, around 8.5%, 9% per annum over the long term. So you're significantly above what the S&P 500 does on average. So it is a decent type of return. And then obviously to kind of make it even more attractive, we're adding 30% capital protection to that as well. So if after the five-year period, one of the indices hasn't been positive, or the worst index at least hasn't been positive at any point, and let's say that ends 29% down, you'll get all your capital back as well.
And the thinking here, and I like it, as you say, 12%, and this is a dollar product, 12% is ahead of what the S&P typically does. This is almost, if I glance out, and particularly at US markets, but there is a worry about very high valuations, and this kind of fits into that theme, in that it's saying, well, here's some good return, and as you say, some protection on the downside as well.
Yeah, I think it goes to the nature of structured products. So when you look at an equity or a bond or you know, the finance mechanism of companies, it's not necessarily, I mean, they're wonderful investment products, but it's not designed as an investment product. The way my colleague Viv explains it, it's like a cave in a house. a cave will give you shelter. That's fine. And an equity will give you return, but it's not tailored and designed to meet your specific outcomes. A structured product is more like a house. You're taking a bond, you're taking some derivatives, and you're rolling it up into a product, and you're creating something that you want to see a specific payoff over time. And now to your point, I'm looking at a chart of the S&P 500 at the moment, and it's short of the tiny little blip we had down on Friday evening. This has been eye-watering returns, and I think what investors have maybe forgotten is just how long a sell-off can last. So if you look at COVID, if you look at what happened in 2022 with Ukraine, you look at the Liberation Day sell-off that we saw, now that the bounce back has been incredibly fast. So while all, I suppose, the newer traders are saying, oh, look at the stripes we have on our back, we've been through three crashes in the last 5 years, these crashes have been incredibly short-lived, and markets have pumped a lot higher. Now part of the reason for that is central banks have had low inflation, so they've been able to inject liquidity into the market. But if you go back to the dot-com crisis, I mean, you're talking 6.5 years before the market got back to normal levels, if you'd invested at the worst point. Even look at the global financial crisis. I mean, you're talking about just over 5 years before the S&P 500 index got to the same point it was. Now, we've designed this product specifically so that in a flat or sideways, kind of a flat to sideways market, you can still get a decent return. And what would happen in that situation, even if you were investing at the worst time now, and let's say that, kind of the dispute that we're seeing between the US and China at the moment, mm-hmm. that turns into something more material, and we see markets sell off properly, or let's say that AI stocks are overvalued, and this is a dot-com situation, and it takes 5 years for the market to get back to a flat return. If you had bought the ETFs, if you had gone and bought S&P 500, like a Vanguard tracker or Eurostocks or the Nikkei, you could be sitting after 5 years with a 0% return. As long as in that period, which is highly likely, I mean, we've run the back testing, and it is very, very likely that you will be back to at least flat. there at least you get that 12% plus 12% plus 12%, you know, all the way through, and you will generate significant outperformance on the contract. So that's the idea. It's not something to go and put all your money into. Yeah. That's not what we're saying, but it's that diversifying element that allows you to generate an above average return, even if markets are trending sideways.
Yeah, and I mean, who knows how the next 5 years are going to play out? We've still got 3 years and 3 months of Trump. 5 years is a long time in markets. Leave it there. Gary Boyson, Rand Swiss. If you want more details, contact the team there, but appreciate the early morning time. That's it for today. We're chatting with Skulk Lowe on Friday. He, of course, PSG Old Oak. Talking around, if you hadn't had any gold or PGMs in your portfolio, your market returns were not so great, not anywhere near the plus 30% we have done so far. We asked how your portfolio done this year. Half said brilliant. Around 40% said on par with the index, which is still a solid return at over 30%. The rest said poorly. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nabuchlet, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Kogo M3 results.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.